Who's in charge around here? You ever had somebody ask you that? I don't know, maybe at the office or maybe on the factory floor, might be the ballpark, might be in the soccer field. I mean, is anybody in charge around here? Well, how about at church? You ever had somebody ask you who's in charge here? I mean, who runs the church? Is this one of those places where one pastor calls all the shots, or is there a leadership team? People might want to know, are you staff-led or are you elder-led? Maybe they're asking, are you guys under the Pope or the Archbishop of Canterbury, Bob Russell, Jerry Falwell, Franklin Graham? Maybe it's the preacher, that guy that looks like Opie Taylor. Is he the one who calls all the shots around here? They might be wondering, are you all a church where every decision is made by congregational vote, or do you have representatives who lead? Who's in charge here? Well, friends, the Bible says that Jesus is the head of the church, that he runs the church, that he is in charge of the church. He calls the shots. Now, our elders offer oversight here, and my role puts me in a position to set some direction and to cast some vision. Our staff helps carry out the mission, but Jesus is the head of the church. He runs the church. He's the one who's in charge. And we're doing this year-long study of the Gospel of Luke. It's Jesus in 2020. And for the next several weeks, we're going to look at how Jesus runs the church. What's his perspective on what we ought to be doing to fulfill his mission and impact the world? Now, remember, the church is not a building. I mean, man, if ever we saw that, it's been in the last 3 months. We have dozens of people right now who are worshiping with us, and they're not in this room at all. They're not even anywhere close to here. But they are still us because we are the church. Church is the body of Christ. It's his people. It's those who belong to him. So what are the priorities that his people, the church, ought to be focused on? How can we engage culture? What's our role in the community? How can we reach outward, not just locally, not just domestically, but even internationally? We're going to start out today by seeing that the church is a place where needs are met. I mean, let's face it, Jesus met needs. That was a key part of his ministry. His primary mission, of course, was to come to earth to die on the cross, to save us from our sins, and then to rise from the dead to prove that his promises were true. But throughout his ministry, he healed the sick, and he fed the hungry. He rescued his disciples from life-threatening storms. He raised the dead. He even got wine to a wedding reception. I mean, plain and simple, Jesus met needs. In John 13, he said, "I've set you an example that you should do as I have done for you." We are Jesus to the community. We are Jesus to our families and our friends and our coworkers and students at school. The church is a place where needs are met. That means we are people who meet needs. So what I want to do is I want to show you the story in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus met a need, and then we'll talk about what our responsibility is to fulfill all this. Luke chapter 13, beginning in verse 10, says this. On a Sabbath, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues, and a woman was there who had been crippled by a spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not straighten up at all. Now, Luke says she was crippled by a spirit. In fact, Jesus said in verse 16 of this chapter, Satan has kept her bound for 18 years. Apparently, there was some demonic force that was oppressing this woman, had her all bent over, unable to straighten up. Now, you need to understand that all sickness is not necessarily an attack of Satan. I mean, sometimes it's germs in the air. Sometimes it's microorganisms on the doorknobs and the furniture. It's why we've been wearing masks. It's why we disinfect everything that we possibly can. I mean, you know the drill. You gargle Lysol before you leave the house. You boil your hands when you get home. You want to make sure that all the germs are killed because sometimes germs cause disease. Now, some sickness, frankly, is hereditary. Blame your parents. Sometimes it's a result of bad choices and destructive behavior. Sometimes there are birth defects. Sometimes sickness is the result of old age. I had a doctor tell me one time, you know what causes that? Birthdays. Stop having them. Oh, yeah, well, I mean, good luck with that. Luke 6:18 refers to people that Jesus healed of their diseases, and it says he also cured those who were troubled by evil spirits. So who needed his help? Some had disease, because we live in a broken world where there's disease. Some people were troubled by evil spirits. It's not always an evil spirit, but sometimes there is kind of demonic influence going on. And that's what was the case for this woman. Her body was crippled because Satan was oppressing her in some way. Now, we don't know what it was. Was it arthritis or scoliosis or osteoporosis, some other affliction? We don't know. Really, the diagnosis itself and even the source of the sickness isn't as important for us at this moment as it is to remember that she's been this way for 18 years. If she were here today bent over, that would mean this all got started in 2002. It's a long time to be in pain. Now, a couple of things about her being sick and being in the synagogue on this day. First of all, good for her that she is still coming and worshiping with God's people, even though she feels lousy. Some of you can relate to that. You know, you just got to plow on through. Every excuse in the world to stay home, but I want to be with God's people. So that's where she is. Good for her. You also have to wonder if anybody at church is still noticing her pain after so long. Oh, at first she got lots of attention. Mabel, you feeling okay? Honey, you're all hunched over. You need to go get that looked at. It's just not right. Now, what can we do to help? How about we mow your grass, we'll bring you some meals, and we'll run you to the store if you need us to. But you know how it is. People get busy, and lives are distracting, and people forget. And Mabel trudges along through life year after year, making the best of a bad situation. And after a while, nobody notices anymore. Oh, that's just Mabel. She's never been able to stand up straight. Now look at verse 12. When Jesus saw her, he called her forward, brought her right down front, said to her, "Woman, you are set free from your infirmity." And then he put his hands on her, and immediately she straightened up, and she praised God. Man, can you imagine how awkward this was for her? She's just trying to slip into church and blend in, and the preacher up front has her come down front and make a spectacle of her. Now why did he do that? Well, I think he wanted her to realize that what's about to happen is by the power of God. He also wanted the congregation to realize that what is about to happen is by the power of God. And truthfully, I'm thinking he also wanted to stir things up a little bit in this sleepy little synagogue. And he did stir things up. We're going to see that in just a second. But you know, I like the fact that Jesus was in the middle of a sermon when this happened. I mean, this woman didn't kind of run up to him, you know, throw herself down in front of him, interrupt the whole service, beg him for help. No. He interrupted himself. He's doing something really important. He's teaching. And suddenly, he sees this woman, and she becomes more important than what he's doing. Good for him. You get the idea that he's kind of scanning the crowd, in tune with them, even as he's doing his message. And he sees her pain. He's like, I can do something about that. And so he does. He gets involved in the situation. I was preaching one time, and I saw a guy have a heart attack. And so I did not call him up front and heal him. We called an ambulance. Because that was, in that moment, the priority. We got to get this guy some help. And then we were able to finish up the service later on. This woman became the priority to Jesus. He brought her up front. He healed her. He changed her life. Now, let me ask you something. Do you suppose that she remembered what he preached on that day? I doubt it. Do you suppose that she could tell you the Bible text and the bottom line from his sermon? I doubt it. Did she remember his opening joke? Yeah, they always remember the jokes. But everybody else forgets everything else. Okay, so Jesus, listen, what he did overshadowed for her what he said. He met her need that day, and that kind of opened her ears up to anything else he would ever say after that. It was a powerful day. Meeting needs builds bridges. You've probably heard this 1,000 times. Maybe you're tempted to roll your eyes because it just sounds so trite, but it really is true. People do not care how much you know Until what? They know how much you care. Meeting needs builds bridges. That's what Jesus did. But look what happened next in verse 14. Indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, the synagogue ruler said to the people, "There are 6 days for work. Come and get healed on those days, but not on the Sabbath day." Now, in her defense, she had not come to get healed. She came to worship. She had no idea what was about to happen for her. But Jesus saw her need, and he met it. And it's just mind-blowing to me. I mean, it would be funny if it wasn't so tragic. He has just worked this amazing miracle. I mean, if it happened right here today, we would be freaking out. And the guy in charge is mad. And we've seen this before. Instead of giving glory to God for an amazing miracle, these religious leaders are mad because Jesus broke protocol. We don't do it that way. You guys remember John Y. Brown when he was governor of Kentucky? He told one time about driving himself to the hospital because he thought he was having a heart attack. And he thought, rather than take the time to call an ambulance, I'm just going to get there as fast as I can. He pulled up by the emergency room door. He got out. He came in. He said, "Ma'am, I think I'm having a heart attack." And she said, "You're parked in a no parking zone. You need to move your car." He said, "Ma'am, I need a doctor. I'm having a heart attack." She said, "Honey, you move your car. You can come back in. We'll make sure you see a doctor." He went outside, moved his car, came back in, and finished having his heart attack. That is somebody who has lost sight of the purpose for which they were there. And that's this guy in Luke 13. Instead of saying, "Jesus just met this unbelievable need," he's like, "You didn't do it the right way. You broke the rules." It's like, stop interrupting church with your problems. Your kind of noisy, crippled up troubles are interfering with what we're trying to do here. And so what did Jesus say? Verse 15, the Lord answered him, "You hypocrites." There must have been more mad than just the one, but we just heard from the one leader. "You hypocrites," plural. "Doesn't each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or donkey from the stall and lead it over and give it water? Then should not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan has kept bound for 18 long years, be set free on the Sabbath day from what has bound her?" It's like, for crying out loud, you feed and water your animals. I mean, you give your donkey something to drink, and the ox gets some grain, and you give, you know, seeds to your gerbil and kale to your iguana. I'm just trying to cover all my bases here. And you give, you know, kibbles to your dog, whatever. Look, if you're going to take care of your animals, how much more should a human being, a daughter of Abraham, be set free from her affliction? And you're thinking, how could this even be a problem to this guy? It's because he put rules over relationships. It's because procedures became more important than people. He was all about envy deep in his heart instead of excitement over what God was doing. But at least the congregation didn't miss the significance of this, even if the staff did. Look at verse 17. When he said this to them, all his opponents were humiliated, but the people were delighted with all the wonderful things that he was doing. I mean, come on, we get it. Haters gonna hate. But everybody else is blown away by what Jesus has just done. He saw a need and he met it. That's just the kind of thing he did. But you know, this passage raises some interesting questions, especially in light of how the church is supposed to respond to the world. Should we just stick to spiritual matters and let places like Salvation Army and St. Vincent de Paul and Community Action, well, they can handle the physical stuff? When is it the responsibility of the church as a body to engage, and when is it just our responsibility as individuals to step in and do something? Because we can't miraculously heal people in the way that Jesus did, does that kind of let us off the hook and remove responsibility for us getting involved in people's messy lives? I mean, those are important questions. And as I was working on my sermon this week, I got an email from YouVersion. It's the Bible app. Many of you use that. If you don't, man, it's free. It's a great tool. But anyway, they send out articles. They send out devotionals. And they sent one out on Friday, and I kind of scanned through it, and I actually got some ideas for my message today. So let me make some suggestions to you on how we meet needs so that we can be like Jesus to our community. The first thing is step toward pain. Step toward pain. I came across a photograph this week, I think it was on Facebook, somebody posted, from the 9/11 terrorist attack when the Twin Towers were bombed. And it kind of asked the question, who ran away from the Twin Towers when they were crumbling and who ran toward them? And it showed police officers and firefighters risking their lives running into danger. And many of them gave their lives. There are people who run toward danger, and there are people who run away from it. And I get it. Some people are trained to help. They need to be there. Some of us would just get in the way. We need to get out of the way. I mean, I understand that. But there's something that happens with people's pain. Some people are so uncomfortable with other people's pain that they run away from it. If not literally, then emotionally. It's easier not to visit the hospital. It is more pleasant to avoid nursing homes. I'll send flowers to the funeral, but I don't want to stand next to the casket and hug somebody who's crying. That's just kind of uncomfortable. Why would I go on a mission trip during vacation? I don't want to see all that. I can't believe she's talking about her problems again next time we are not inviting her to go out to dinner with us. Wearing us out. Now, maybe you're not equipped to counsel somebody in need. I understand. The sight of blood might make you faint. Okay. You start carrying around everybody else's problems on your shoulders, it's going to make you crumble under the weight of it. I get it. You can't do everything. But man, there is something powerful about people who fill in gaps, people who step in and help others in need. We sent out a one call this week. For those of you who are on that list, Handle the Masters was saying that we are going to be preparing some meals for Hunter and Kirsten Downs. Their little boy Asher's been in the hospital for a couple of weeks, and now he's home, got a long recovery ahead, so the least we can do is provide some meals. And so many of you are involved with that, or we encourage you to do that. And maybe you say, well, I'm not a cook, there's nothing I can do to help, I will be doing them a favor not bringing them food. I mean, I get it, that's me. But you know what? You can pay for a meal, you could give a gift card. There's just ways. What I'm saying is, there are ways that we can meet needs, even if that's not maybe our area of expertise. If you're on our church email list, I'm going to forward an email to you this week. It came to us as a church just about needs of senior adults in the community and ways that people can engage and help seniors. Because a lot of people, especially right now, have been so isolated and so lonely. And there's just kind of a list of articles and helps and suggestions. And I would just encourage you, if you've been one of those people saying, what can I do to help? Maybe you look down through there and see if there aren't some things that kind of, you know, draw your attention or make your heart beat a little faster. Maybe that's something I could do. Several years ago, I was driving on Dixie Highway, and it was just kind of a blurred memory of the first part of this. All of a sudden, there was a car tire rolling straight toward my car, and I kind of saw something happen over here, but it just happened so fast. I pulled over and realized a crash had just happened, and a woman had been thrown through the windshield of the car. I'm the first guy there. So, I mean, I run over. I can't do anything to help her physically. But she's laying there in the grass, and I take her hand, and I engage her, and I start talking to her, and I pray for her, and I try to calm her down and keep her conscious. And the ambulance gets there, and they reset her leg, which I certainly couldn't do. But I could hold her hand while they did that. Now, look, there's so much I couldn't do in that situation, but the tiny little bit I could do, I'd like to think maybe that helped a little bit. Because sometimes things just happen, and we are the person, and we can step in some way and engage. There's a verse in the Old Testament, the prophet Ezekiel. I don't quote from Ezekiel very often, but man, there's a verse where God is punishing the pagan nations in the Old Testament. And I want you to listen to what God says about Sodom. This was her sin. She and her daughters were arrogant, overfed, and unconcerned. They did not help the poor and the needy. Listen to those three words. They were arrogant, they were overfed, they were unconcerned. Lord, please let that never be said of us. We need to be alert to step toward pain, not run away. But you know what else you have to do if you're going to get involved and meet needs? Man, you got to sacrifice your plans. You got to be willing to be interrupted sometimes, willing to set aside your agenda. Now, I get that you can't just walk around through life waiting to be interrupted. You can't just jump every time there's some frivolous thing going on. Maybe what you're doing is way more important than the interruption. I truly get that. You have to prioritize sometimes. But you know what? Sometimes what we're doing is not as important as we like to think it is. And there's this need that hits us, and we really can step in and do something. Sometimes we need to set aside our agenda. Life is not a competition to see whose time is more valuable. Our goal is to kind of help each other get from here to eternity. And that means we have to be flexible. I read an interesting article several years ago about the television show Survivor. You know, we are all used to competitions where experts decide who stays and who goes, who wins, who loses, who advances to the next level, and who gets cut. I mean, from the Miss America pageant to the Olympics to the Great British Cooking Show or Baking Show. You know, I mean, we understand sometimes there are judges who decide who wins and who loses. But when Survivor came along, however many years ago, it introduced us to kind of a whole new brand of competition. The competitors themselves vote each other off the island or out of the jungle or off the tundra or whatever else they've done, you know, in that show. It's gone on and on. Those who compete decide who stays and who goes. And the article pointed out that there's kind of a worrisome message there. Shows like Survivor make life out to be an elimination contest. I have to beat you. And even though we are working together right now, ultimately I have to outshine you so that I can make sure that I'm better than you. And it's just sort of a strange look at life as an elimination contest. Now, maybe that's not such a big deal on reality TV, because let's face it, reality TV has nothing to do with reality. But it's hard to nurture healthy relationships if we're always competing with each other on whose time's more important, or who gets more money invested in their cause, or who gets the resources, who gets the attention. If I'm competing against everybody in my house or in the church or everybody in the whole world, it's just hard to build healthy relationships. If we're going to be a place that meets needs, and if we're going to be people who meet needs, sometimes we have to set our agenda aside. Sometimes we have to make other people the priority. Sometimes we have to take a back seat to somebody else's pain. And so we'd be willing to step toward pain, and we'd be willing to sacrifice our plans. But the last thing here is that we have to take specific action. It has to be intentional and specific. Jesus didn't just kind of wave his hands over an audience and suddenly everybody was healthy and happy. He didn't arrive in Bethlehem on that starry, starry night and suddenly there's no more cancer and no more disease and no more seasonal allergies. Jesus healed people, but he did it one at a time. He did it two at a time. Okay, one time he did it 10 at a time, but they all came to him at one time as a group. Jesus then engaged people that he healed. He didn't just sort of smack people on the forehead. They fall back. The disciples catch him, carry him off stage. The next person comes up for a miracle. No, he talked to people. He wanted them to have more than an experience. He wanted them to have faith. He was specific. And I think there's a danger sometimes, especially in the kind of times that we've been going through lately, where we see all this trouble and all this hurt and all this heartache in the world, and it all just seems so big, and it's all so overwhelming that we don't know what to do, so we don't do anything. We just say, you know, I can't fix this mess, so we don't fix anything. You know, I feel like God has been teaching me this year that I can't fix everybody's problems, that I can't meet everybody's needs. I can't save Nelson County, much less the world. And it's not like I just figured that out this year. I'm just saying this year I feel like God's really been teaching me this in a specific way. And I'm a slow learner. And it just feels like the problems are so big and the world is so complex. I was talking to a new friend of mine this week who's been starting to visit our church. And I was trying to articulate this to him. And I don't know if I said it very well, but the idea was kind of like, you know, people talk about we have to redeem culture, or we have to turn the country around. We've got to turn the nation around. And I got to be honest with you. I'm pretty convinced that there's not going to be some vast, sweeping change for the good. The Bible says the world's just going to get worse and worse. I'm not looking for some kind of global shift. I think that it's one at a time. I think that change and impact and influence is just one person at a time. We have to be specific to invest in somebody, maybe a couple of people, maybe it's part of your extended family, maybe it's your neighbors, maybe it's a coworker or two. Not very many of us shape culture, but all of us can impact somebody. And maybe in your whole life you'll impact one or two people, but maybe it's people that nobody else would have ever impacted. If enough of us got serious about making a difference to somebody, then think what could happen with all of us making our little difference. No telling what God might do. When our family lived in Columbus, Indiana years ago, there was a guy who wandered around town named Nelson. Now, Nelson was not all there mentally. I don't know if he had been kind of born that way. I really suspect that drugs and alcohol had fried his brain. But I was also pretty sure over a period of time getting to know him that he was sober, he was clean. I don't think there was anything going on anymore. It was just too late, you know. But he was a really sweet guy, and he just kind of hung around, would talk to anybody who would talk to him. And it was kind of a funny thing. Every time there was an election for mayor in town, in the primary where anybody can run, Nelson ran for mayor. And his platform was he wanted to get rid of the cracks in the sidewalk so people wouldn't trip, and he wanted more places to do karaoke. And so those were the kind of things that Nelson was about. And it was kind of funny because the newspaper had to print anybody who was running for mayor, so they had to put this stuff in the paper. It was like Mayberry, I'm telling you, it was funny. But anyway, every time Nelson saw me, he knew I was a preacher at a church there in town, he would hit me up for money. Would I give him some money for a sandwich, for a hamburger? And it wasn't like every other day or something, but it was every 2 or 3 weeks. And so I kind of had to decide, am I going to avoid Nelson every time I see him? You know, am I going to try to, sorry, I don't have anything today. And I just started folding up a $5 bill and tucking it into my wallet, and that was my Nelson 5. And whenever he'd see me and we'd chat for a minute, I'd give him $5. I never voted for him to be mayor. And I don't know if that $5 helped him or maybe I was enabling him. I don't know. But I like to think that at least he knew of all the people who avoided him around town that there was one guy who loved Jesus who also loved him. And I just think there ought to be a little more of that in the world. And I'm telling myself too because I'm not always very good at it. You know, something I'm really proud of about our church is that through this shutdown time, you guys have been so generous. I mean, our offerings have been great. You all have just been so faithful. Last month, we were able to send an extra $1,000 to Uganda to help people who are dying of starvation. This month, we sent $500 to India, another $500 to Ukraine to help people in need, and $1,000 to Community Action to help people in Nelson County who are hungry. Because you guys are so generous. And God just blesses that, and God uses that. And you know what the truth is? We can't fix Bardstown with $1,000, and we can't fix the world with 500 here, 500 there. It is a drop in the bucket, but that drop helps somebody. It meets somebody's need. You know, I'm telling you, the world's a dark place, and we cannot dispel all the darkness. Jesus couldn't even do that when he came to earth. But you know what we can do? We can light one little candle, and a little bit of the darkness gets pushed back. This is the bottom line for today. Yeah, the world's a dark place, but I'm telling you, every time you meet a need, you light a candle. Every time you meet a need, you light a candle, and it makes a difference when we do it together. Fred Craddock is one of my favorite preachers. He's retired now. He's kind of a guy from down the Atlanta area. He was a teacher as well as a preacher. And when he was a young guy starting out in ministry, he told about preaching in a little town in the southern part of Tennessee. And this little church had a custom at Easter. They would get the people together who had come to Christ, and they would do a baptism by the lake near their church. And this little congregation would set up tents and people could go in and change clothes after the baptisms. And then they would light a fire so everybody could kind of warm up around the fire together. And they would sing and they would pray and it would get dark. And then they would gather up together and introduce each other to the new folks. And he said, one by one, members would say things like, "My name's Mary. And if you ever need help with ironing or washing, I'd be glad to give you a hand." Somebody else would say, "My name's Bill, and if you ever need a ride to the doctor or the grocery store, man, I'd be glad to give you a ride. My name's Betty, and if you ever need somebody to sit with the sick or to babysit, man, give me a call. Glad to help. My name's Earl. If you ever need your car worked on, my number's in the book. My name's John. You need some plumbing done. I'm pretty handy with that. Be glad to help you. And Craddock said we would sing and we would eat and we would square dance together on that little area by the lake. And then one of the guys would say, folks, it's time to go home. And they'd put out the fire and everybody would leave together. And he said after that first Easter afternoon, he was leaving with one of the deacons. And the deacon said, you know, Fred, people just don't get any closer than this. And later on, Fred Craddock said, you know, in that little town in South Tennessee, they had a word for what happened that day. It's a word you've probably heard before. They call it church. Because church is a place where needs are met.